Chapter 35.
It wasn't long before Greer had to return to bed. He began to groan a lot and hold his injured ribs, and soon he was reinstalled upstairs with the pillows at his back and the little pink jacket buttoned to the neck. Whiskey was the only thing that gave him relief from his pain, and the level of his bedside bottle went down with remarkable speed. Life resumed its dreary pattern. Mrs. Greer was usually around when I had to report to her husband. Beyond the bedroom door, there would be a lot of whispering which stopped as soon as I entered. I would receive my instructions while Mrs. Greer fussed round the bed, tucking things in, patting her husband's brow with a folded handkerchief, and all the time darting little glances of dislike at me. Immediately I got outside the door, the whispering started again. It was quite late one evening, about 10 o'clock, when the call from Mrs. Mallard came in. Her dog had a bone in its throat, and would Mr. Greer come at once? I was starting to say that he was ill, and I was doing his work, but it was too late. There was a click as the receiver went down at the other end. Greer reacted to the news by going into a sort of trance. His chin sank on his chest, and he sat immobile for nearly a minute while he gave the matter careful thought. Then he straightened up suddenly and stabbed a finger at me.
"It'll not be a bone in its throat. It'll only be a touch of pharyngitis making it cough."
I was surprised at his confidence. "Don't you think I'd better take some long forceps just in case?"
"No, no, I've told you now. There'll be no bone. So go down and put up some of the syrup of squills and ipecacuanha mixture. That's all it'll want. And another thing, if you can't find anything wrong, don't say so. Tell the lady it's pharyngitis and how to treat it.
You have to justify your visit, you can."
I felt a little bewildered as I filled a 4-ounce bottle in the dispensary, but I took a few pairs of forceps with me too. I had lost a bit of faith in Greer's long-range diagnosis. I was surprised when Mrs. Mallard opened the door of the smart, semi-detached house. For some reason, I had expected an old lady, but here was a striking-looking blonde woman of about 40, with her hair piled up high in glamorous layers, as was the fashion at that time. And I hadn't expected the long ballroom dress in shimmering green, the enormous swaying earrings, the heavily made-up face. Mrs. Mallard seemed surprised, too. She stared blankly at me till I explained the position. "I've come to see your dog. I'm Mr. Greer's locum. He's ill at the moment, I'm afraid." It took a fair time for the information to get through, because she still stood on the doorstep as if she didn't know what I was talking about. Then she came to life and opened the door wide.
"Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. Do come in."
I walked past her through an almost palpable wall of perfume and into a room on the left of the hall. The perfume was even stronger in here, but it was in keeping with the single pink-tinted lamp, which shed a dim but rosy light on the wide divan drawn close to the flickering fire. Somewhere in the shadows, a radiogram was softly pouring out "Body and Soul." There was no sign of my patient, and Mrs. Mallard looked at me irresolutely, fingering one of her earrings. "Do you want me to see him in here?" I asked.
"Oh, yes, certainly."
She became brisk and opened the door at the end of the room. Immediately, a little West Highland Terrier bounded across the carpet and held himself at me with a woof of delight. He tried his best to lick my face by a series of mighty springs, and this might have gone on for quite a long time had I not caught him in mid-air. Mrs. Mallard smiled nervously.
"He seems a lot better now," she said.
I flopped down on the divan still with the little dog in my arms and prized open his jaws. Even in that dim light, it was obvious that there was nothing in his throat. I gently slid my forefinger over the back of his tongue, and the terrier made no protest as I explored his gullet. Then I dropped him down on the carpet and took his temperature. Normal. "Well, Mrs. Mallard," I said, "there is certainly no bone in his throat, and he has no fever." I was about to add that the dog seemed perfectly fit to me when I remembered Greer's parting admonition. I had to justify my visit. I cleared my throat. "It's just possible, though, that he has a little pharyngitis which has been making him cough or retch." I opened the terrier's mouth again. As you see, the back of the throat is rather inflamed. He may have got a mild infection in there, or perhaps swallowed some irritant. I have some medicine in the car, which will soon put him right. Realizing I was beginning to gabble, I brought my speech to a close. Mrs. Mallard hung on every word, peering anxiously into the little dog's mouth and nodding her head rapidly. "Oh, yes, I do see," she said. "Thank you so much. What a good thing I sent for you."